Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Office Evolution Radio, and this is going to be a fun one. We're going to kick off today's show. We're in the Dunwoody location of Office Evolution, by the way, and it is beautiful here in Dunwoody. There's a lot of activity. Another perfect day here in Atlanta. We're going to kick off today's show with Debbie Sonnenschein, and she is with the Sonnenschein team, a Coldwell Banker realtor serving the Sandy Springs Dunwoody area, right?
And Buckhead.
And Buckhead, too. Nice. And Brookhaven. There's the cities keep popping up. I'm sure it's evolved over the years you've been doing this, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about Sonnenschein team. How are you serving folks?
Well, appreciate that. We are a small team. Basically, it's my assistant and I. And I've been in the business for 37 years with Coldwell Banker in the Sandy Springs office the entire time, which is very unusual for real estate agents because they tend to want to make changes. And I think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But, you know, obviously we are very service oriented and we want to provide our clients with a really excellent experience. I work with buyers and sellers. And we pride ourselves on listening and problem solving and doing very creative marketing.
So now, how did you get into the real estate business? You've been doing it for a while. Was it has that been your career, your whole career, or you started somewhere else?
Well, I started in my first life, actually, as a social worker at Grady Hospital in pediatrics.
Wow.
And I figured if I could do that, I could do anything. I loved it. It was my passion, but I had a child and it became very difficult to work with sick children when you have a young child.
Yeah.
And as much as I saw many, many miracles at Grady Hospital, and it's very dear to my heart, the administration at that time was not very progressive like it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And I really burned out. My husband is a commercial real estate guy and he kept telling me to go into real estate. And about that time we sold our first house and bought our second house. And I loved the whole experience. I staged the house. I negotiated everything. And my realtor kept saying, you need to go into real estate. So very long story short, because I didn't listen to either one of them, I had to go through a path of discovery on my own. I decided to go into real estate, thought it would be a fun part-time job. And from day one, it was fun, but it wasn't a part-time job.
So now, when you and your husband are talking about real estate, how is the commercial different than the residential?
Oh, it's so completely different. In fact, advice I was given by my first and very special broker who mentored me was, don't talk to your husband about your business. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to know, and you don't care or want to know about his. So we do talk some about it, but so much of what I do is so confidential that I find it better not to even discuss it with him. So that he would say anything, but I don't want him to even slip up. But he obviously has given me some good advice through the years. He advised me to go with Coldwell Banker because it was a large national company, and that was the best advice that anybody could have given me. Because at the time, most companies were mom and pop, and I got excellent training and support through Coldwell Banker. But
is there a difference kind of in the way you serve a client from a commercial real estate side as a residential? Is there
totally
a different kind of sales cycle or in different relationships?
Totally. The reason that I love residential is because it's much more, it's personal and I'm a social worker.
Right.
So I'm a hand holder and a problem solver. And I come from a business background. I grew up in a family business. Commercial real estate is more of a numbers business. My husband is a numbers guy and very, very good at he's very analytical, let's just say. So it's more that, whereas this is more listening to people and helping them achieve their dreams. And that is more about getting the right return on investment. So, you know, obviously residential real estate is a little bit about investment, but it's more about where should my kids go to school? Where am mm-hmm. I going to be happiest and the right backyard and bathroom and neighborhood and all the pieces that I love.
Now, when you started, you mentioned it was 37 years ago. That was before, I guess, Dunwoody was Dunwoody, Brookhaven was Brookhaven.
Well, there were no cities.
Right. It was, was the area still the same? You were always working in this part of town?
Yeah. I mean, back then, East Cobb was really, really hot. Mm-hmm. And we worked with so many of the transferees coming in with the large companies and Coca-Cola and GE, IBM, all the big companies. We would, so many people wanted to live in East Cobb because that's where the new construction was. So I worked all over. I've always worked kind of all over. Mm-hmm. But, and then Alpharetta became the hot, you know, area with new construction. But now with the traffic and at the point I'm at in my career, I've reined in a little bit and I do go to those areas. In fact, I was even in East Atlanta and West Atlanta a couple of weeks ago with a client. But I try to really concentrate more in the Sandy Springs, Buckhead, Dunwoody and Brookhaven areas. Really Sandy Springs for the most part. I've become very, very active in the city of Sandy Springs and I just am so proud of it and love it so much. I'm so excited about it. It's just been transformational.
So you're pretty bullish in the Sandy Springs?
Oh, yeah. I can see that Sandy Springs, not just for me, but even for young people, has become much more popular. With the opening this year of City Springs, it's unbelievable. You know, people talk about walkability. Well, Sandy Springs is walkable now.
Right.
We go to the theater there and to concerts and ballets and just everything. And to be able to walk across the street and have dinner and park for $5 or free, and the tickets are so reasonable and it's such a pleasure. There's not a bad seat in the entire theater, either theater. It's just a treat. I've been to so many events there where you go upstairs and you have this beautiful space to look out over the city and have huge terraces for the pre-function areas, and it's just, it's a real heart to the city that we've never had before. And you see your neighbors, you see your friends. It's just a whole different, I just get goosebumps every time I go there. It's just a whole different feeling that none of the other cities really have. Mm. You know, to go down to the Fox is just a whole production and it's not fun. But this is such a pleasure and you're home in 10 minutes and you're there with people that you know. It's created a sense of community that I don't think anybody, I mean, we all hoped for, but nobody could have ever really seen. I mean, the green outside, you see the kids running around, and you see the farmer's market on a Saturday, and the little playhouses they had at Christmas time with the lights on it. I mean, it's just, there's something for everybody. If you want to, last week they had a lecture from a National Geographic lecture on Mars. I mean, we went to the Cuban music and dance performance. There's just so diverse and so exciting. People want to live in Sandy Springs now, and the schools are so excellent. So, and the taxes are more reasonable. So there are a lot of reasons that people want to be in Sandy Springs now.
Now, are you seeing enough inventory, or is there, like, what's the inventory status for Sandy Springs?
It depends on the price range. And everybody's like, how's the market? I hear there's no inventory. A, don't believe anything you read in the newspaper, because it's just not necessarily true. If you read the newspaper or even listen to the radio or you listen see online, one article says there's too much inventory. One says there's not enough inventory. The sales are down. The sales are up. It doesn't matter. It's very, very micro. So it depends on your price range, your area, what school district. For example, under $500,000 today in Sandy Springs, there's less than 3 months worth of inventory. Over $1.5 million, there's over 2 years worth of inventory. So it's very different.
What does that mean, like 3 months worth of inventory or 2 years worth of inventory?
Well, for example, let's say there's, actually I can tell you specifically right now in the $100,000 to $500,000 range in Sandy Springs, there are 40 houses on the market. And in the last 6 months, 86 houses have sold. So that's an absorption rate,
right,
basically, is what we call it. Whereas on the upper end, and it's, I didn't get school specific, but basically over 2 million, there are 48 homes on the market and only 11 have closed in the last 6 months. So you see if two, let's say, are selling each month, then it's going to take over 24
right,
months.
Right, to deplete all that inventory.
Yeah. Now, of course, that's assuming nothing else comes on the market.
Right.
I mean, you know, but it's just,
it's
one of the tools.
It's not perfect, but it's just
no, it's one of the tools that
idea.
We use. 6 months is the industry norm of about what kind of inventory you want. But a house that's priced well, that's in excellent condition in a really good school district, should sell in the first 1 to 3 weeks.
Really? Yep. That fast? Yep. Wow.
If it's not, then it's either a unique property, which we have a lot of unique properties, or it's a price issue, or it's a time of the year. I mean, it just depends. Or maybe it's the condition. Mm-hmm. The buyers are so unrealistic today. I call it the HGTV factor.
Oh,
they
right.
all think they're spoiled and they think they need to walk in and everything be perfect.
Right.
They don't want to paint a wall. They don't want to change a floor. They don't want to do anything. And there are, and Sandy Springs is an older market. I
right.
mean, Sandy Springs, Dunwoody, Brookhaven, all of them. Most of these homes are a little bit older. And if you want to get into a good school district, to buy a new home is going to be well over $1 million typically. So anything that's reasonably priced is going to need some work. They think. I mean, you know, to me, I don't care. but they do. And so they don't want to do it. Either maybe they don't have the money, or they're both working. They don't think they have the time, or they just are spoiled and don't want to be bothered. But you know, people are going to have to get a little more realistic and realize if they want location, just like when yesterday I was actually showing in Morningside. Well, those homes are quite small. The closets are teeny. The bathrooms are tiny.
Those are super expensive.
Super expensive.
Like, how much is a Morningside home?
Well, it depends. I mean, yesterday
but it could be $1 million.
Yeah,
easy,
but
right?
I was just showing like sort of what you would call a starter home bungalow for $500,000. It's crazy, and you know, they just, you could say they needed work, but no matter how much work you did, you're not going to have a decent closet. Or a,
right,
because
when
know,
were those
bathroom.
Homes built? Like in the 20s?
Yeah, they're old. Yeah, right. So, but because it's such a hot location, then people are willing to accept that. So it all depends. But I think the buyers have to get more realistic, and the sellers have to have their homes in excellent condition. For example, when I list a home, the first thing I do before we ever put it on the market is I bring in my stager. And I have a stager who goes through the home, meets with the homeowner, and I'm not even there. I let them do it together because the last thing they need is another woman's opinion. But she is amazing, and she goes through the home and tells them, okay, let's move this over here. Let's pack this up. Let's neutralize this. She doesn't necessarily bring in a lot of furniture or tell them to go buy a lot of stuff. She uses what they have. But we keep in mind all the time what the pictures are going to look like, because it's all about the pictures. If the pictures are not good, nobody's going to come see the house because everybody's shopping online.
Right. So that's the first move that people are making nowadays, which may be different than it was 10 or 15 years ago,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah.
So the buyers coming to you already kind of have an idea of what they're looking for, what's out there. So that changes how you kind of dealing with them as well, right?
Exactly. It used to be that we walked around with these big fat books that were like telephone books, and my back still remembers those. And we had all the information. But today, the public has information. Now, the public thinks that they understand how to interpret the information, and they don't always, which is problematic. But
is that information really accurate, or is it close?
It depends.
Close?
It depends. What they see in the MLS, which is on Zillow or Realtor.com or whatever, that comes straight from the MLS. So it's pretty much correct. But Zillow, for example, is not updated regularly like some of the, like our proprietary sites are. So I've had people say, I want to see this house. I'm like, it's sold. No, it's on Zillow. I'm like, here, can I show you it sold 2 years ago? You know, and they just never updated
it. Wrong by 2 years?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And the square footages are wrong. And what they call a Zestimate, which is, right. you know, Zillow's mm-hmm. estimate. It's very interesting. Zillow's never been in that house or any other house.
Right, it's just some algorithm, right?
It's an algorithm, and they base it on the tax record and other things. But and I may have my numbers off just a little bit, but the president of Zillow's house had a Zestimate of $1.6 million, and it sold for $1.2 million approximately. So, you know, if it's not right for him, it's not
it's
right for most people.
Right.
Yeah. So I always say to people, I've been in the house, Zillow has not, you
exactly.
know. So they're looking at square footage. They're not looking at the fact that it's got shag carpet and, you know, Formica countertops.
So now, any advice for that buyer who's just getting started in looking for a home? Like, should they narrow down the area? Do they do it by school? I want my kid to go to the school. Like, what's the strategy if you're buying?
Well, everybody has different likes and dislikes.
Priorities,
yeah.
Right.
I think the first thing to do is to, I sit down with my clients and I do a real estate 101. We spend about an hour or so and we talk about the process and we talk about what's important to them and what they should expect and what they need to do when. So that it's not a surprise, because oftentimes we'll go out and maybe on the first or second time we'll find a house and they're like, whoa, but they're prepared.
Because it happened too fast.
Yeah, but right. They're prepared in a way because we've had this one, Real Estate 101. But first thing they have to do is meet with an agent and then get pre-qualified by a lender, because there's no point in wasting their time or setting their expectations incorrectly.
If you think you can afford $500,000 and then you get pre-qualified and it's $350,000,
yeah.
Now that changes everything.
Exactly. So you don't want to, it's a lot easier to go up in price than to go down in price. Mm-hmm. So first get pre-qualified, talk with an agent, and then an agent can help guide them to, they may think they want one area and it turns out that what they're really looking for is an area they didn't even know about. But people want, their expectations are unrealistic sometimes. Now, sometimes they're very prepared. They'll come to us and say, here's the four houses that I like. I want to see these.
Like, I like this style of a house, or I like, this amount of commute I anticipate.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Like, those are some of the things, the
and
factors.
And if they have kids, then school is often very, very important. And, I like a big backyard, or I don't care about a backyard. I mean, there's so many different factors. So mm-hmm. we try to guide them. Unfortunately or fortunately, though, there's a saying in real estate that buyers are liars. And we don't really mean that they mean to lie, but I did it when I was looking at my first home. I said, I have to have a separate dining room. Well, I didn't even have a dining room table.
But in your head,
23 years old, but my mother had a separate dining room. I thought I had to have that. So I ended up buying a house that had a living room, dining room combination. Right. Considering I had no furniture for either one, it really didn't matter. But it had a big kitchen, and that turned me on. So the agent was smart enough at that time to realize that that's not exactly
meant. You have to kind of read between the lines of what you really want, not what you're saying you want.
Right. And there's must-haves and want-to-haves.
Right.
So, everything's a compromise.
Now, tell us about this new venture you got going on, The Faces of Sandy Springs.
Well, I'm really excited
about
this.
How did it come about?
Well, there's an agent in Gainesville, Hall County, that is doing this website, and he approached me and asked me if I wanted to do it in Sandy Springs, and I got so excited about it because I'm a graduate of Leadership Sandy Springs, mm-hmm. and I've been on the board of the Community Assistance Center, and I'm just involved in a lot of things in Sandy Springs. So to me, to be able to put a face on our community, especially at this point in our evolution, was really important. So I loved his idea. And basically, thefacesofsandysprings.com, what it is we've just launched it, so it's in its infancy. But I've interviewed, now I'm up to 13, this week will be my 14th interview. We have profiles of different people in the community. And the goal is for people to be able to go to the website and learn about different people in the community personally and see the diversity of the community. And also, I have links to the schools. I have links to all of the city offices and different things, information, anything you want to know about the city, you can go to thefacesofsandysprings.com. And I'm asking people to nominate other people that they think would be interesting to profile on the website. So we've got some folks we're going to be talking to, but anybody is welcome to nominate somebody. And we have a student who's at North Springs who is Chinese and speaks fluent Mandarin. She's an amazing woman. She has started a STEM group, a women in technology group in her high school. She is, my guess is she'll be salutatorian of North Springs. She also is a Georgia fencing champion.
Wow.
And was on the did something with the Holocaust Commission. A very well-rounded, incredible woman. I have Steve Soteris, who's a city councilman, who's also vice president of Choate Construction, and he's a fun, cool guy. And I have Jason Sheets, who's the owner of Hammocks Restaurant and Under the Cork Tree, and he shared some fun things about his special moment in his life that you need to go read about, who he was kissed by a very famous person. So we have some really interesting, Andrea Settles, who I call the queen of Sandy Springs. Lots of people that have interesting things that they shared. So I hope people will go to the site and nominate somebody.
Now, is this a kind of a labor of love for you? This is your way of sharing kind of the community, the people who are doing interesting things in the community? Or is this like, do they have to pay to be part of it? Like, how does this
work?
Oh,
no, 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 no. It's a labor of love, but I mean, it is a promotion for the Sun and Shine team also. But it's, I just feel like it's something that, again, puts a face on the community. Mm-hmm. You know, we see all the buildings in town, but who are the people behind the buildings? And so hopefully when someone's thinking about moving to Sandy Springs or they already live there, they can learn about some of the people that make Sandy Springs the rich community that it is. But no, I just have people nominate different people and obviously people that
I know. And it's all ages, all walks mm-hmm. of life.
Yes, yes. It's not necessarily people that have been involved in the city or accomplished right. anything in particular.
Just they're doing interesting things.
Doing interesting things. I interviewed, one of my most interesting interviews was Alexandra Corman, who owns an alteration shop near my office. And she immigrated here from the Ukraine. And just an incredible story of growing up with her family in this tiny little apartment, having, you know, next to nothing, and being able to, the community in Atlanta brought her over, and being able to immigrate here and bring her children and her family. And her son is now a Marine because he wants to give back to the wow. country that gave him so much. It just gives me goosebumps every time I
now are these are you videotaping these interviews, or you're they're writing questions and they're answering it? Is it text?
Basically, my assistant and I sit down and interview them. We record it. It's not videotape, but we have a picture of each person mm-hmm. and then just a small.
And then you write kind of mm-hmm. the.
We have set questions that we ask right. them in small profile. They're pretty short.
Cool. So that's a great way to give back to the community.
I'm excited about it.
And then the website once again for that?
TheFacesOfSandySprings.com.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more about your team, what's the website for that?
SunAndShineTeam.com.
And then on either one of those, you can find the other website?
Probably.
Hopefully. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today. It sounds like you're doing amazing things and you really have immersed yourself in the community here.
Oh, thank you very much. I feel like it's given me a lot and I hope to be able to continue to give back. Thank you.
Well, hang with us. We've got one more guest.
Okay.
All right. Next up on Office Evolution Radio, we got Mark Daner with WF Advisors. That's Wells Fargo Advisors. Welcome.
Good morning.
All right. Lean in there. You got to rock star that microphone.
All right.
So tell us about WF Advisors. How are you serving folks?
So I practice what I call holistic financial management, where we sit down with clients and help them set and prioritize financial goals. Most people's most important goal, obviously, is to be able to retire comfortably and securely. So typically that's their main goal, but educating their children, potentially buying a second home or some type of other large financial goal. So we first thing we do is we help people set and prioritize their financial goals. And then we put together plans, goals-based investment plans to help them reach those goals.
So now what is your typical client? Are they older people that are close to retirement? Or are you, like, do you have a kind of a niche that you serve?
So my typical client, I tend to meet either 5 to 10 years before retirement or shortly after retirement. Mm-hmm. People tend to put money into their 401k. They tend to make other investments and don't really think about big financial goals until they get into their 40s or 50s. 50 seems to be a really magic number.
That's
for
a
most
trigger
people. Yeah.
That people are like, oh, I should start paying attention to this.
Exactly. Exactly. So typically around age 50, people really start to think, am I prepared? Am I on the right track? And maybe I should get some help in determining all of this. And that's a lot of the time when people get to see me. Ideally, people should start thinking about that right away.
Like at the beginning of their work career?
As soon as they start working, as soon as you have earned income. Mm-hmm. It's all about the power of compound interest. If you don't mind, I'll just tell you a quick story how I got into the financial advisory business. So my dad, his first job out of college was as a CPA, and he was a CPA for several years, and then he started businesses. He was sort of what we would call today a serial entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Every business he ever started had to do with money, whether it was equipment leasing or some type of financing business, and he would take me to work from time to time. And all I heard about growing up was money. When he started his own businesses, we kind of lived this feast and famine lifestyle. And so I've learned what it was like to have money and what it was like to not have money. And in my case, it was always a lot better to have money.
Yeah, that's what, that was the lesson learned there.
Yeah, very, very early age. And I always became fascinated with money. And when I was in my early 20s, I read this book by an author called John Train called Money Masters. And he profiled Warren Buffett, John Templeton, and seven other great investors from the 50s, 60s, and 70s in this book. And, you know, it fascinated me not only how great they were at investing, but somebody like Warren Buffett, original investors in his Berkshire Hathaway, became millionaires or multimillionaires by investing with this man. And I thought, well, this is something that this is a lot better way of living than I've lived or grown up. This is what I want to do. So fast forward 6 years later, I went to work. I started with Merrill Lynch and thinking I would be the next Warren Buffett.
So, but there's a difference between helping someone invest and being an investor.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So when I got to Merrill Lynch, they had just started focusing on financial planning, mm-hmm. helping people set and prioritize financial goals and putting together a long-term plan to help them reach those goals. So that's what I was trained in. So it was the book is what initiated my interest, but my training at Merrill Lynch is what really got me involved in long-term planning for people.
Now, when you're working with a person, how important is kind of understanding what their tolerance for risk is? Because like your dad, even though he was a CPA, and you would think CPAs are kind of conservative when it comes to risk, he was kind of venturing on anytime it's your own business is kind of a speculative stock, right?
Like exactly.
That's not a CD, right? That's more of a speculative stock. Like you said, it could do extremely well, or even things out of your control can make it go bad.
Yeah. So that's probably one of the most important things that a person can find out about themselves is mm-hmm. what their tolerance for risk is. I call it risk comfort level, because tolerance and comfort level are very different things. Our industry is all about risk tolerance. What's your risk tolerance? Oh, well, I could tolerate a 20% loss. Well, then most advisors would then put you in a portfolio that at some point in time is virtually guaranteed to have a 20% loss. When that happens, especially to people who are 50 or 60 years old who have saved up a lot of money.
That's a different emotion.
Yeah,
when
totally.
You're 20 and mm-hmm. a 20% loss happens, and then when you're 70 and
exactly.
a 20% loss happens.
And so knowing what your risk tolerance is important, but managing your risk comfort level is even more important, because what happens is people's risk tolerance or comfort level changes with the market. So when the market's going up and they're making money in their 401k, it triggers a chemical in their brain that is similar to a gambler who's winning in Las Vegas. Some psychologists say it even triggers the part of the brain that gets activated by things like cocaine.
Wow.
So they start to become more risk tolerant. They want more risk, more return.
Just really want the return.
Yeah, they just really want the return. they don't want the risk.
They're not that thrilled with.
That's exactly right. When the market turns and starts
which
to drop.
Which it does do.
Which from time to time, as we saw just last year,
right.
The markets can get really scary. And then people panic. And what happens is when the markets are moving up, they reach for more and more return, which then puts them into investments that have higher and higher risks, so that when the market does turn, they start to panic. And
the market doesn't ring a bell when it's going down.
No.
And it doesn't tell you when they've hit the bottom.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And there has never, study after study shows, there has never been one person or one organization that can, with any accuracy, predict what the market's going to do. On a regular basis, mm-hmm. they may get it right once or twice, like a broken clock.
Right,
but there's no one who can predict that.
There's no system.
There's no system out there. No matter what you see on the internet or hear on the radio.
Right. So now, because of that, you have to protect your clients from making emotional decisions, right?
That's right. That's
right. And that's part of your job. That's why they're paying you to kind of watch their back in this area.
That's the, that is probably the biggest part of my job is what we call behavioral coaching, helping people to not get too aggressive when the markets are doing well and not get too conservative when the markets are doing poorly, and find out what is the right mix of stocks, bonds, cash, other types of investments that will allow them to kind of hold on during the bad times and allow them to benefit during the good times.
And also, this is an ever-changing thing. It's not like set it and forget it, because at each stage of your life, you have different goals and objectives.
That's right? Correct.
Like, so like I might be saving for a house or saving for my kids' college at one point, and then at another point, I might be thinking about retirement. So maybe I have to have more reliable, consistent returns than some big upswing.
That you hit the nail on the head. So as your life changes, your portfolio changes. As your needs change, your portfolio changes. When people get into a stage of taking money out of their 401k or IRA to live on, the consistency of return can become more important than the rate of return, because you taking money out of your portfolio increases the downside and decreases the upside. And so as your life changes, as your goals change, your portfolio needs to change to kind of match that.
So now as your role as an advisor, how do you kind of work with your clients? Is this something that I pay you a fee based on transactions that happen? Is it I pay you a flat fee based on the value of my portfolio? Like, how do you get paid? Because it sounds like there's a lot of kind of white glove, hands-on care that you're giving your clients.
That's exactly right. So we charge a very straightforward fee based on the amount of money that we're managing for a client, an annual fee. And that includes financial plan or investment planning, retirement planning, estate planning, all transactions. So there's no transaction costs when we make changes to a client's portfolio. We just charge that one annual fee.
And then so that fee is determined at a certain point of the year?
It's determined quarterly. So based on the previous, the value of the account at the beginning of the quarter, and it can range anywhere from as low as 0.75% a year to 1.25% a year, depending on the value of the accounts that
we
manage.
But you're having calls with me, we're emailing, we're in contact fairly regularly to update in case things change. Like this isn't just like I don't hear from you until I get an invoice, right?
Correct. So we're really proactive for people who live in the area. We typically will meet with them anywhere from newer clients we meet with quarterly. I have clients that have worked with me for 25 years who we have to kind of bang on the head to get them in once a year.
Right. But that's important.
It is. It's
now
important.
Are you the quarterback in terms for like for my financial life? Are you my CFO? Like, are you paying attention to what my CPA is doing, how my business is going, how my things I've like, what are you paying attention to?
So that's a great,
like, are you paying attention to that?
That's a great question and a great term. So we do act as people's personal CFOs. We're helping coordinate your attorney, your accountant, your insurance, taking a look at your total financial picture and how that affects.
You don't have to worry about my realtor. I got a good one over here.
That's right. And sometimes we work with real estate agents and in terms of helping to serve the client's total needs.
Mm-hmm. So then if I don't have a CPA, or maybe the one I'm having, you would have an opinion and maybe steer me to somebody. Like, you're good with resource. I would imagine you are helping me vet the right fit for helping me achieve my goals.
So typically we, give you three different people that we think would be a good fit for you, whether it be a CPA or an attorney or an insurance agent or a real estate agent, to help you meet those specific needs.
Now, are you finding, something I read recently, that a lot of financial advisors for people that are older, the children of those people don't necessarily sign back up with them when the parent passes.
Right. That we do find that. I'm fortunate in that a lot of my retired clients have introduced me to their adult children.
So you have a way to kind of get them in the loop. I always thought that was a missed opportunity for some financial advisors to ignore the children And even if they're young children, like my kid's 21, if my financial advisor would have said something like, you know, I don't have anything for them because they don't make enough money, but I recommend go to Wealthfront and put a few hundred dollars a month in that, at least get them in the habit of saving so we can kind of leverage the compounding part. Even if it's not a lot, it's something.
Yep. And it's not only a missed opportunity for the advisor, it's a missed opportunity for the family. So I'll give you a really good example. I have a family that I've worked with for probably 20 years or longer. And several years ago, well, really almost from the beginning, I've worked with their adult daughter. She then got married, worked with the son-in-law. The father passed away a couple of weeks ago. So instead of them having to go deal with a stranger on helping their mom settle all of the father's accounts, they're dealing with somebody they've known for 20 years. So it's not just about the missed opportunity for the advisor. In my mind, it's about helping the family have a smooth transition. So we really encourage our retired clients to at least have us have a conversation with their children as soon as possible and get them in the habit of saving and investing for their future. And it also makes the transition a lot easier when the time comes.
Now, and you said you help also with insurance because that's a component of a person's kind of financial world, right?
Yep. So if you're working and you're saving in your 401k and you become disabled, that is going to throw your whole plan off. So you either have to decide to self-insure for that or find the right type of long-term disability insurance. Right. Same with life insurance. You know, if you're 40 years old and you're the primary breadwinner and you've got all these retirement plans and then you die, your spouse and your children, all their all your retirement plans, all your plans for their education are out the window if you're not properly insured.
Now, are you up for having conversations with people, even though they may not be investing with you and your firm, but they might have a good 401k? Do you help them even though they might not have a lot of cash to put into your account?
We do a lot of, our typical client is somebody who's getting closer to retirement, but many times I'll meet somebody who is not ready to have a financial advisor, but just needs a little bit of kind of getting pointed in the right direction. So just like attorneys or accountants, we do a certain amount of pro bono work helping people like that. And sometimes it is a friend or a family member of a current client, or somebody, you know, that we
need. Right. They might have money in a 401k where their company says, here, these are the six mutual funds you can invest in.
Exactly.
Now, a lot of times I would think that people that you're dealing with, they have a financial advisor. Is that not accurate, that they're doing it themselves most of the time?
It's about 50-50. So when I meet somebody, it's either because they're not happy with their current financial advisor, or they have been doing it themselves for many, many years, and all of a sudden they're getting closer to retirement and they're realizing, I've got to make this money last a long time, and I have to start taking money out of it instead of putting money into it. And people get a little bit panicky and nervous when that happens. So typically I will see do-it-yourself investors search for an advisor as they get closer to retirement.
Now, are you seeing anything in the kind of the rules of thumb that people have been following for many decades? Are they different now that people are living longer and not having, and maybe they're working longer now? Like some of the assumptions maybe we made 10 or 15 years ago are different now.
Yep.
Because people, like my dad's 94. I mean, I don't think he anticipated living in 94.
Definitely not. In fact, when Social Security was first created, I think the average life expectancy of a 65-year-old man was 18 months. Mm-hmm. So the average life expectancy of a 65-year-old man now is something in the order of 16 years. So people are definitely living longer, which changes the way they invest. So when I first started almost 30 years ago, if somebody retired, we'd have most of their money in fixed income because they're only going to live 5 or 10 years. People who retire today need to have more of their money in the stock market because they might live 30 years in retirement. Even though people are living longer, we're finding people are retiring earlier. So their retirement's even longer.
So they're stressing their financial situation from both ends of the balloon there.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
So now, so you're seeing that trend occurring?
Yep.
People want to retire earlier and they're living longer.
Exactly. So we have to plan for a longer period of time. We have to have more money in equities because equities or stocks are what help offset inflation over time and help you grow the portfolio so that it lasts as long as you do.
Now, do you typically kind of chunk out their portfolio? So you put some in this more high risk area and then you have like different chunks like, okay, this is going to get you these 10 years. This is for the 10 to 20. This is for 20 to 30.
Yep. So typically what we're looking for is it what we call an asset allocation, which is a mix of stocks and bonds and cash and other investments and different types of stocks, international, U.S., long-term bonds, short-term bonds. There's a mix that is right for you. So the way we do that is to take all of your financial goals and test those goals against 1,000 different possibilities in the stock and bond markets using returns going all the way back to 1926 to come up with the mix of investments or the mix of stocks, bonds, and cash, what we call the asset allocation, that gives you the highest probability of meeting your goals over your lifetime. And we update that on a regular basis based on the markets, based on your goals, based on where you are in terms of time frame for your goals.
Now, as part of that kind of asset allocation, looking at, okay, you might have to get a job, like you might have to get income from a more reliable source than these things. You need more.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes we have to have very hard conversations with people that say, if you continue on the track that you're on, you're not going to be able to live the lifestyle you want in retirement. So you either have to postpone retirement or get a part-time job in retirement. My typical client is what I call the not-so-wealthy wealthy, so sort of upper-middle-class people who have really kind of done the right things most of their lives, put money in the 401k, saved money outside the 401k. So that's a rare conversation I have to have. Typically, it's more about just making sure they have the right portfolio to help them meet their goals and sticking with that portfolio in good times and bad.
Is there a number that people should shoot for, or is that kind of a myth too, that everybody's situation's different?
It's very different. I mean, the government will tell you you need about 80% of your pre-retirement income to live comfortably during retirement. That's from the Social Security Administration. What I find is the first part of retirement is the most expensive part. So you've been working all your life. You have all these dreams and plans and goals, and you never had the time to do it.
So now you binge a little?
You do. Your first 10 years of retirement, we say the first 10 years are the go-go years, the next 10 years are the slow-go years, and the last 10 years, if you're lucky to have them, are the no-go years. I mean, if you think about your 94-year-old dad, he's not traveling to Europe and doing all these fun things. But, a 64-year-old...
But I'll tell you, his care is probably more expensive than it was
at
the beginning of this.
So typically, barring long-term care, people will spend much more money in the first 10 years of retirement than they will in the second or third 10. Mm-hmm. But we do have to plan for long-term care. So that's another thing. Do you want to self-insure or do you want an insurance company to help you with long-term care? Because Medicare does not pay for long-term care.
Right. So, and that's part of your value to your customers, right? You're helping them think about these things that maybe aren't their expertise and the stuff that they don't think about until now, where you're thinking about it every day.
Exactly. So we're trying to get people to, live today, but plan for the future and all of the possible things that could happen in the future. At least let's have a conversation about that and plan for it and determine whether you want to self-insure or have, put that risk onto an insurance company.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, is there a website or what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yep. Website is my name, basically Mark with a C, MarkDaner.com.
Good. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
All right. That's a wrap for episode number one at Office Evolution Radio. We will see you next time.